Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays. You're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like? Because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora. He's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/Count the Dings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP. That's 1-800-639-8783. Or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So what do you think?
It's showtime.
another episode of Showtime. I'm your host, Jason Madison, Birdman Hand Rub, joined by my co-hosts, as always, Bethany Anderson and Anthony Mays. What up, y'all? How y'all feeling?
What's good? Feeling like a basketball wife today.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I got lots of questions for you today. Big shout out to our fans who reminded me that we are the podcast that stands for penis equality on HBO.
That's right.
We want to see dicks of all shapes, colors, and creeds. That is our podcast mission. Thank you.
Make sure we get that out the way first. Man, Atlanta?
Yeah, let's do Atlanta first. I know you're chopping in the bit here, Jason. You're not feeling too hot. This is the second episode that you haven't really liked at all, right?
Yep. This is number two.
After the first one?
After
the fried chicken, or was it the second one?
Yeah, it was the fried chicken one that I did.
So you are against the two sort of anthology episodes that we've gotten so far that have nothing to do with our main characters.
Yeah. The first one with the main characters was cool. It wasn't great either, but these two in particular, there's a level of unsettling behavior in the racial direction that I don't think is fruitful for anybody, and it upsets my stomach.
Okay. Let's hear more about that. What exactly is, like, bothering you?
Well, in this episode, particular, when Shaniqua comes into his house and she's, like, yelling and not, like, she's just not being a reasonable human being. And I get it. It's a show. This is a dramatic scene. But I just feel like it took me out of just feeling for her and the whole situation. Like, because I like the idea of the plot, like, okay, white people have to pay reparations, whatever. Like, if you find who, you know, who's connected to who, you could count up or whatever, however you want to run it. I get it. That's cool. But then, like, having her come in there, like, this is my house and blah, blah, blah. It's like the same way I kind of felt how they did the mom in the other episode, because the mom was, like, over abusive to her son and then just, like, throws him out and shit. And I was just like, I get it, but it's like y'all kind of doing too much. Like, I like the other parts of the story and, like, kind of what they were saying about, you know, the foster kids in that last episode. Like, that was, like, an important, like, interesting story, and the way they told that was interesting. But yeah, I felt that Shaniqua's scene was out of place and just out of pocket.
You know, I get exactly what you're saying, because I was uncomfortable watching that scene. I was uncomfortable watching Loquarius's mom just do the most. But at the same time, we have black people who are like that. And I know we don't want to show that side of us. Right. But when it comes to representation, I think we have to show all sides of black people.
Right.
We are multifaceted. We have different sides to us. And to just put, you know, all of our greatness out there, it gets a little bit boring. Like, we are heavily layered. But I get how it can make you very uncomfortable, but you might know someone who is just like that. You might know someone, or, you know, somebody's mom reminds you of Loquarius's mom, or Shaniqua, who was on live all up in Marshall's house. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but those people exist. I'm going to just go ahead and say it. Like, based off of this interview that Donald Glover had with himself.
Oh, God.
And the way that he's painting Zazie Beetz as well, like, all of the female black characters don't be shit and be extra'd out in a weird ass way. And it's like, he doesn't have no fly black women, like, in his shit. And the way it shows how he thinks of black women, and I don't think they're represented fully well. It's not like all of them are those women. You know what I'm saying? Like, show some fly women teaching you something or doing something, or, you know what I'm saying, handling their shit. Like, show those too. If you want to show the, you know what I'm saying, like, the girl stealing and, you know, the girl hitting her son, and then, you know what I'm saying, the girl on live, like, where's the, like, the other side?
Yeah. So you just want it to be a balance.
Or just make sense in a world, you know what I'm saying? And if your world is all about these fucked up portrayals of black women, then I think that's kind of fucked up.
Yeah, like, I get it. Yeah.
So
what else did you think about his interview? How did that even happen? Like, how do you say, oh, I'm just going to interview myself?
Just like, it's too self-important. It's too, like, you know, a lot of stuff. It didn't come across like how I think he wanted it to come across.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the best part was that he said, you know, I don't like normal interviews because they don't ask. They all ask the same questions, you know. I don't ever hear anything new. And then he asked himself the most straightforward-ass questions that you could possibly get. Your most run-of-the-mill basic journalism 101 stuff. Exactly. I mean, I've always been a Donald Glover fan. I know that there's, like, from the community, 30 Rock writing days. Like, I've been on, what is it? What was his little, like, Derek comedy? I used to watch Derek comedy videos with the big black dildo. That was a great one.
I don't know nothing about that.
Bro rape. Everybody at home, go look up on YouTube. Bro rape. It's a fantastic.
Never heard of that.
Fake Dateline comedy video from like the 2010s. I've been a fan for a long time. He's officially jumped the shark into Kanye lunacy of self-importance. Like,
yeah.
Not quite Kanye Yeezus era, but like right before when he's going on Jimmy Kimmel and doing, you know, flow stream of consciousness ranting for minutes at a time to the point where Jimmy Kimmel's like, okay, and we're going to another commercial. Like this interviewing yourself, comparing your show to The Sopranos. We love your show. Don't get me wrong, Donald. Your show is fantastic, but chill the fuck out and let your art speak for itself for a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously. And it's also like, I'm not going to make an excuse for Kanye, but the difference is also Kanye has 100+ songs behind him before he starts really, you know, getting into that Yeezus era. It's like, Donald Glover, you have one album and a song here or there. You know what I'm saying? You got a nice show for a couple seasons. Like, let's chill it out on, you know what I'm saying? I'm the god of this and doing all of that. Like,
yeah, I'm not talking so much about Kanye's music as I am when he's saying, I invented the leather jogging pant. And like,
I'm
Steve Jobs and I'm going to smash the ceiling, the glass ceiling. Don't put a box on me. Like that type of shit. That's what I'm saying.
I'm giving credence to Kanye doing that to a certain extent for having all his catalog. And I'm just saying Donald Glover does not have that same catalog to be puffing his chest out like that. And it's like, bro, just chill. Do your little show. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's not little. It's a good show. I don't want to downgrade what he's doing. I fuck with his show. It's very creative. Like, you know, and it has a voice and intention and creative ideas and great actors. All this shit. But, yeah, when you talk in the press, I don't know.
Did you guys watch The Shop where he was on with LeBron?
No, I haven't seen that episode yet. What was he saying?
Well, one thing he did say is that he was kind of jealous of Kenta in her show Abbott Elementary that he just you know loves. But one thing that they did mention was that, you know, when it comes to movies and TV shows, it's such a long process, whereas a song you can make in one night and have it out the next day and it go around the world.
Or if you're Dolly Parton, you can make two.
Oh, boom. Okay. And so I get what you're saying as far as like he doesn't have enough work under his belt yet to really just be going out here saying, like, I'm this and I'm that.
I mean, counterpoint, he is halfway to an EGOT, all right? Like, this is not
true.
This is not a joke. He's in his 30s. Like, he could easily decide to write Atlanta the Musical and win a Tony Award and then maybe down the line, you know, get some sort of Academy Award for either writing or acting or whatever. So, like, I'm not trying to take away from his talent. I just, it's more the ego from the EGOT that I'm objecting to. but you know, enough of that self-indulgent interview. Let's talk about this episode where I was very uncomfortable, guys. I don't know.
Yeah, how did you feel as a white man watching all this happen?
As a white man, as the white voice of this Equal Opportunity Dick podcast, I was, you know, it was funny because it felt like a horror version of two different Dave Chappelle sketches.
Yes.
Reparations. I'm rich, biatch, all that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then also when keeping it real goes wrong. It's like this episode was one giant example of when keeping it real goes wrong. And and, you know, Shaniqua doesn't like people playing on her phone, and she was about to absolutely wreck shit.
Yeah, it was like the inverse, right? Because she kept it real, and it actually went right for her.
It went right, yes. She kept it extremely real, and it went extremely right, yes.
Yeah.
But I see what you say, Jason. I respect the fact that this show can do anything, and that it can. Oh, you thought you wanted to see what, you know, what Van is up to after her late night dinner? Nope. Like we did a whole episode at this party that was self-contained. Now we're just completely shifting gears. I respect that. I don't think it was as good as the rest of the three episodes, but it is also weird to try to imagine a world where the first episode and the fourth episode can both happen. Like,
right.
Is that the world we're supposed to be living in Atlanta?
I guess. And we're not in Atlanta anymore. Was this in Atlanta? Have any of the episodes taken place in Atlanta?
This one was.
Okay, this
sure.
one was in Atlanta.
And I think the first one was as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. But I guess maybe it'll come every other episode. I don't, like, who knows what they're doing
whenever
at this point.
Whenever they want.
Yeah, what this season was about. I mean, I think they got a lot of acclaim from the Teddy Perkins episode. I think a lot of shows get acclaim from their one-off divergent ideas that break the, you know, the chain link of the narrative that's going for the season. So, you know, Thanksgiving episode kind of made Lena Waithe blow up in a way for Master of None. So,
yeah,
I get it as, like, you know, that's a different way to go at your album sequencing, but for us, I don't know. We're still getting used to it. And I guess in a way this could be his 808s and heartbreaks. I don't know. You know, it's like, look at it in that lens.
This episode was just really fun. Like, I enjoy like turning on the show and not knowing what the fuck is about to happen and just going for the ride and being introduced to this character, Marshall, and just going on this ride. The only thing that really kind of confused me was the black guy at the beginning at the coffee shop, and he's on the phone or he's listening to the podcast and the guy's on the phone talking to the cashier and he gets in the back and he goes to the back of the line or whatever.
Yeah,
I'm not sure what's going on there.
I think she told either his car got declined or she told him to go to the back of line because he was on the cell phone. They didn't really show like what that was about. That was my two guesses. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, I think that was just supposed to be confusing, because it's like we're trying to figure it out. You know, like it's a slow unpacking of what the conceit is. So it's just supposed to be like, yeah, there's some racial tension. We're not really sure what it's about.
Yeah. Okay. And so I've really enjoyed the conversations between. In the first episode, we have, at the very beginning of the first episode of this season, we have the white guy and the black guy in a boat.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking to him. He's pretty much putting him up on game and telling him the history of this lake that they're on, which I'm guessing in Atlanta is probably Lake Lanier, which a lot of people have drowned in this lake, and that there's a lost town underneath that was flooded to get rid of this black prominent city. And we see this guy again in episode 4 at the hotel talking to Marshall, our main character, who is just down and out. And he's educating him on why all of this actually makes sense, why black people should be getting this money. But the one thing that just threw me off is that in episode 1, after he tells his black homeboy in the boat about all of this, he turns into like this creature, his whole face goes white, and he drowns old dude before L'Aquarius wakes up in this dream. But episode 4, he excuses himself and goes outside and kills himself. Now, I was having a conversation with my best friend about this episode because I'm trying to figure out like, what, why is this connected? Like, are we going to see this guy kind of being weaved in and out of this series, even though he's killed himself in this in episode 4, but at the same time, in episode 1, he turned into like this ghostly person and then reemerges in this episode. But she said something that I just couldn't get out of my brain. And she was like, I think that this guy represents the myth of the white ally. And and so she was like, on the boat, you know, he harms the black man, but with Marshall, he excuses himself because in his wokeness, he's not going to help the black man. But with the white guy, he's kind of putting him up on game. but he's still going to take the easy way out and not pay up to this black family or whoever he owes. And she said, there is still white supremacy within white allyship. And I was just like, oh, shit. Like, I'm trying to figure out, like, what, you know, the writer's room, you know, what they're trying to do here with this one particular character.
Yeah. So the opening boat scene for sure feels like an epigraph or, you know, some sort of like prologue to what this season is going to be about. Mm-hmm. I think that your friend is really on point. I think that the, you know, Atlanta's always talked about racial dynamics, but it feels like there's kind of an extra emphasis, definitely in these two episodes, on like the white perspective on it, which is sort of new. Like there aren't very many white characters previously in Atlanta. And the most interesting thing about that guy, first of all, thank you for pointing that out. I didn't realize that until you said that's the same guy. Like I didn't.
I didn't know that was the same guy at all.
We all look the same, you know. Like, it's kind of hard.
Exactly.
I had to go back.
Another white guy.
Once he started to kind of go into this whole story, I was like, wait, this feels really familiar. So as soon as the episode went off, I went back. He has on the same outfit and everything from the boat. So I was like, oh, okay, what are we doing here?
So then he sort of becomes like a ghost, you know, like he's not even a real person.
Exactly.
And especially if he shows up again, right? Like then it'll be game over.
Yeah. I feel like it's more like a white devil sound like to me, because he's telling the black man this story, then he kills him, then he goes white. Then he's telling this white man, like you said, but won't harm the white man. And then he can't take it, and you know what I'm saying, paying the black man, and he already killed, you know, like, he just seemed like he going to hell, like, he killing himself, that's what, you know, like, it seemed like that's part of the character, you know, they want him to play like a new age white devil, like, not like Al Pacino, but like a new version.
It's like, I get, like, you're telling the story, but who is your intended audience for that, like, who are you talking to about this? Like, who are you trying to educate? Because a lot of black people know about, you know, Lake Lanier, but your intended audience is probably not watching Atlanta.
Right. But that's the thing, too, I feel about the show. Like, the overly racial shit, like, I don't know, just in general as a creator and somebody who watches shit, like, it's so over racial, racist. We're going to make a story about reparations and racist white people and make these white people feel bad. Like, who is your audience, bro? Like, all the people who's watching this already know that. So, like, who are you trying to, like, impress with this story? And that's really, like, the truth of how I feel about it. Like, I'm just like, if you are an intelligent black man, like, bro, we know the same shit. So what are you telling me? Like, white people are racist? Cool, we got that. We already know that. Like, say something else cool or something else interesting, you know, like, and that's why I'm like, why would you waste the whole episode on this? Like, I was kind of bored of it. After like 10 minutes, I'm like, all right, I get where this is going. Like, cool. Oh, okay. Yeah. This would suck if they had to pay back the reparations.
But okay. I mean, you got to say some of it was funny. Like when Marshall's wife, all of a sudden kind of switches up, like I'm Peruvian. This would never happen to me.
Amazing. Yep.
No, it had its moments. It had some moments for sure. Yeah. But she wasn't feeling him anyway. She was off him
according to his daughter, you know, she's putting on perfume and, you know.
That's for somebody else. Come on. You know.
Right.
Dad's about to pick the kid up. Like, you got the night to yourself. Come on, B. You know how this is.
He was looking real thirsty.
No, when the ex comes over, you still want to like present yourself and be like, see what you missing out on.
Okay. Right. Got you.
Guys, we've talked about this before. HelloFresh. Our friends at HelloFresh are the best. It makes home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit. Look, here's the deal. It's all about the convenience. Not only did the fresh ingredients, might I add, come pre-portioned so you're not overbuying or wasting food, but it's easier than ever to get filling meals on the table in a snap with options like family-friendly and quick and easy recipes. HelloFresh's chefs really know how to diversify the menu with seasonal recipes like salmon limone and pasta primavera, and you can pick your favorites.
from 50 different weekly options. Skip weeks when you need to, change your delivery day, update your preferences. You can do all of that in the HelloFresh app. As I said, I've done it before, bought it for my family. She did the pasta primavera not too long ago. We've also done, oh, this is one I really love, the Old Bay buttered up chicken. It is fire. It is flames, best of all. It is fresh right in your own kitchen. You made it. You've got the ingredients fresh. And it can be a lot cheaper than going out to eat, absolutely. And also cheaper than buying groceries. So definitely make sure you get up on this HelloFresh train. Go to HelloFresh.com/BOM16 and use code BOM16 for up to 16 free meals and 3 free gifts. Again, HelloFresh.com/BOM16. Use code BOM16 for up to 16 free meals and 3 free gifts. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit.
Looking thirsty.
I hear what you're saying, Jason. I'm with you. I think this was the weakest episode of the year so far. But I, especially with after what B said, this is all building towards something big. Like, yeah. This is building towards a big thing. And, you know, we've talked about, like, comparing this show to an album. Like, we're still on track 4. There's a ways to go. I do want to, because we did bring this up before, I want to read you guys the captions on Hulu. Yeah. For the last couple episodes, because they've been cracking me up. So, the old man in the tree, the Nando one. This one was cool. Going to rich parties and meeting weirdos. Season 1 was better.
Yeah.
And then the big payback. I was legit scared watching this. you have to read in white person voice. Like, that's the only way that one is coming through the screen.
Yeah, that's a good one.
But should we get back to the... The other show, the main show that we're supposed to
the
talk
main
about
course.
On the podcast.
Yeah, let's get to the main course. Yeah, man, because this show has actually been delivering. They delivered even stronger, I feel like, on this episode. This is my favorite episode of the show
so far.
Yeah, this is Adam McKay when he's getting into his movie bag, into his style, and he starts really, like, whoever wrote it, I need to read who wrote it, because... You know, The Emergence of Paul Westhead, which I've been talking about for the last couple of weeks, like, what is that going to be like? And that's what this episode was about for the most part. So, yeah, how'd you guys feel about it?
I'm not going to say it was my favorite. I think when they went to Palm Springs and had training camp, that was probably my favorite. But this, you know, episode 6, what was it? Memento Mori, the episode title. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with Paul being... a Shakespearean, you know, what was it, like an English teacher?
A scholar.
He goes into his comfort zone a lot in this episode, dropping, you know, big gems. He had all the quotes.
Paul's a philosopher. He likes to philosophize and prophesy. He's definitely, you know, calling on all the angels in this episode for him to make it through.
The episode starts with Paul circling the parking lot. He parks, goes in, thinking that he's going to run into Coach, and sees Pat Riley with his feet kicked up on the desk.
I can't get enough of this Pat Riley.
I love it.
I don't care if none of this happened. I love this.
Yeah.
I love how they just tease it every single time. Like, I don't know, you want to coach?
Yeah.
And then he just stares at the camera, then they cut away. It's fucking great. I love it.
It's great.
He's there. He's borrowing Jack's Betamax to watch some game footage. Just great. They give me some nice alliteration to get into the back and forth of the scene. Chick choked on his vodka at commercial.
Yeah.
And so now we're fully rolling. We're steamrolling into this episode, and basically, now they're talking about what they don't know about Jack being in the hospital. They're both apprentices of men. He will become Paul's apprentice. This is a very biblical standoff that they're having. And they're doing it all, you know, with a smile and in jest. None of the, you know, weight of what's really going on has hit them yet. And I think it's just great staging of a scene, you know, just of everything. So
I like what Paul said. He said, the best thing I know how to do is to help another guy be great.
I love that because I feel that way too. I felt that way as well, of like doing videos and, you know, like making music for people, and they, you know, are very successful off of something you do. You're like, damn.
Yeah. Like, as a creative, that, you know, it can honestly be a bit taxing as well, because you're doing so much to help someone and they kind of reap all the benefits. They get all the glory because, you know, later on in the episode, once Paul does go to the hospital, Dr. Buzz calls him Pete. He doesn't even know this guy's name. Oh, like, yeah. No, that's, you know,
wrong
what I mean?
Apostle.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wrong apostle. Great line. Great line.
Yeah. Yeah. But the apprentice's dilemma is what he refers to it as. And I thought that was great. And of course, he gets into his Hamlet bag.
The other thing about that is that it's kind of open to interpretation in the sense, like, what is a coach but someone who makes a bunch of people great? You know, it's like just more than one.
Right. Yeah. No, that it goes all the way to the top of the ladder. Like, it doesn't matter who you are, you will be helping people, or you should be helping people as a part of your quest, right? And that's kind of like what he's saying. And yeah, it's dope to see them, because, you know, he's so worried about his current position, not knowing that obviously Pat will then be his apprentice.
Hello, listener. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you that we at Cinephobe love our pets. Zach and Boogie are inseparable. I've got two cats and a dog, and Amin is giving his best ass-on performance to convince dog owners that he loves their pet.
Hey, noodle. Hey, boy. How you doing? And Noodle's just like, whatever.
Which is why today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. For many pet parents, summer is all about making travel plans, like adventuring through the national parks, visiting pet-friendly beaches, or road tripping across the country. Wherever your journeys take you and your furry friend, you can help protect them along the way with a plan from ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance. Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher-turned-podcast producer, and I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep. Free shipping, vacuum sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise. But maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order.
So,
we move. My young apprentice. And Pat Riley. I was also Riley.
Gonna say it gives Godfather vibes as well. Like, he makes me feel like he's a young Michael Corleone before his dad gets shot, you know? It's like that moment where he's telling Kay, like, this is my family, but it's not me, you know? And basically he has no idea that he's about to become the head of the Lakers the same way Michael became head of the Corleone, is literally waiting for him.
So Jack's wife calls with the bad news, and then we get to go to Magic Johnson meeting with all of these sneaker reps.
Well, wait,
go for it.
One little note. At the end of that, he has to go to where Jack is at the hospital. The hospital is a Little Company of Mary Hospital. I was born at the Little Company of Mary Hospital.
Hey!
In
Torrance. Yeah. Baby Jace.
So, yep, May 26, 1987. I was born at that same exact hospital. So I thought that was dope that I saw that right there as the theme song kicked on to the episode. But yeah, then we get Magic.
Yeah, he's beating with all these sneaker reps. Well, Adidas, Converse, and
Puma.
Puma's there. And he was not thrilled that they just wanted to kind of erase Irvin from everything, pretty much. It's like, no, I'm still EJ. I'm still Irvin. But, I mean, at the beginning of the season, when we were introduced to him, his mom didn't want him to be going by Magic. It's like, why would you go by that name? And he's like, you know, trying to kind of win his mom over. Like, no, it's a dope name. But at the same time, it's like he's in this meeting and he's feeling some kind of way about losing his identity and just being seen as the smiley, happy guy that we're going to put on posters. And so knowing what happens, you know, we already know who he's going to sign with. But I really loved how we were introduced to Phil Knight from Nike, how he wasn't even allowed in the room.
Great moment. Yeah, I've always heard the legend of Phil Knight selling Nikes out of the trunk of his car at Oregon, right. University yep. of Oregon. So this
mixtape style.
This fell in line with that, exactly. bootlegging out of the trunk. So I like that a lot. I like the way they played it, you know, and how we have so much information, just like you're saying, B, and knowing that he's going to be a huge success. But, like, honestly, if I'm Magic, I'm probably not even giving him that much time, you know?
Exactly.
Like, this is some dude.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. The way they played the scene, it's like, it was perfect, you know, because we know that Magic passed on this deal from the story that he told. And then, obviously, like, with Phil putting the contract in the shoe and pulling out the blazer and, you know, all of that was just very, like, you know, the way you picture it in your mind of how he pitched him. So I love that. Obviously, later in the episode, we get to the actual statistics of what Magic missed out on in that deal.
Oh, yeah.
Which was, man, that's crazy. Yeah. Like, can you imagine? And they keep telling the number that he's getting, right? They keep saying 90,000, 80,000, and you're like, oof, that sounds kind of low.
Yeah.
You know? You're like, Magic, maybe you should have had Drew Rosenhaus in there or something other than Dr. Day. How'd you guys feel about Dr. Day?
Oh, boy.
Wow.
First of all, shout out to Steve Harris.
Yeah.
Did a great job.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him
job.
In a while. It's funny to see him with the hair and the big goggles.
Steve Harris with the toupee. Glasses.
Yeah, dude. that was pretty
great.
Funny. But he did great. I enjoyed that performance, but I'm conflicted. I'm conflicted about the Cindy thing. I'm conflicted about the way Magic really handled himself very poorly, even if this isn't real Magic. The whole thing made me pretty uncomfortable, to be honest with you. And I guess good for Dr. Day, like, but
right.
But he didn't. They talk about how it's a business thing, but then they didn't sign a contract or anything. So it seems like it's probably not going to end too well for him.
Oh, yeah.
No. Magic's just running them around right now.
Delivering tickets. Like, cool, dude.
Yeah.
But that was like, honestly, I love that moment at the end of the episode. And that might be why it's my favorite, because it's such a Magic Johnson moment. Even if it didn't happen, it's just like, what, you know, after the last time he gets off the phone with Cookie and he's basically talking shit to her and she's like, nigga, basically don't fucking call me again. He finds out the most playerish way to get her to fuck with him by sending the dad of the girl that he's fucking with to give her some tickets to the Pistons Lakers game. Like, if that's not some player shit, I don't know what it is.
Like, his whole interaction with Cindy is some player shit. Like, she is just doing whatever it is just to stay in his life and in his circle, that she even knows that he's on the phone with Cookie while she's even at the crib, while she's washing dishes and cleaning his drawers. He's talking to Cookie. It's like, yo, Magic.
Yeah. Magic is a fool, dog. Magic is hilarious. He's a magician. I love how they, exactly. So I love how they portrayed him. Even in the scene later when he's talking to Dr. Day in the forum hallway, and he's like, is there something wrong? And he's like, no. Well, yeah, it's just like, that's the perfect, like, Magic kind of like all shucks, like, guy, you know, he's just like, can you do this thing for me?
Magic's not supposed to give the bad news, folks.
That's exactly.
That is not my job.
That's right. Yep.
So, you know, that explains why Magic left the Lakers a couple of years ago.
He doesn't and, give the know, bad news. No,
I won't be there. So, yeah, we love Magic, though. And, yeah, it was fun to see how he, you know, got some kind of game from Dr. Day, you know, a little bit, how to handle the situation. Because Magic didn't know that, right? When Magic was about to go tell all the other shoe companies that he didn't want to fuck with them, Dr. Day is like, nah, I'll do that. Like, we don't need to break any hearts around here on your behalf. Like,
so. But, you know, he told them also, he was like, you know, you have to make choices that Irvin might make that's bad for Magic Johnson. And I mm-hmm. like that, because sometimes you have to separate those two.
Yep.
You have to have someone to at least give you some good advice. And I was going to say earlier when we were talking about the sneakers, when I think of like a businessman, you know, people are going to talk about the out of the two, they're going to put Michael Jordan on his pedestal. But mm-hmm. when it comes to, if I was to ask either one of these guys for business advice, I'm going to Magic, because right. he has made some mistakes that he can absolutely learn from and be like, yeah, look, when I was 19, I went with Converse instead of going with Nike, and I missed out on billions of dollars. When, right. you know, Michael Jordan would have been making money for me. And right. I would absolutely take all the business and financial advice from Magic, because he has learned the hard way and has learned to make better decisions based off those mistakes.
Yeah, Magic is way more of a businessman, I would think, like, just in how he presents himself. But it's funny in this episode how they give so much credit of what happened to Michael Jordan to Magic. You know, they do it a couple times where he's like the one that came up, I want to put my name on the shoe.
Yeah. You know?
And so, and then even when Phil Knight walks up to him and he says, oh, it's going to be called the Nike Magic. Like, you mean the Nike Air Jordan? Like, you know, so it was just funny how they get a little jab to Mike right there. Like, this wasn't originally your play, player, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting. And just in terms of the history, It's really close, B. I see what you're saying about, like, you would take advice from Magic. And I was trying to think in my head about what the real difference was. And, you know, I was going to say that Jordan was better at turning himself into a brand. But I actually don't think that's true, because Magic Johnson is a huge brand. I think it really just comes down to timing. And I think it's like, Larry and Magic did a shitload of prep work so that a guy like Jordan could sweep in and just catapult into the stratosphere, right? Also, it gave Phil Knight a couple more years to sell shoes out of the trunk.
Yeah.
So he could have a more legit plan when he's pitching Michael Jordan, as opposed to the nifty little deal in the shoe offer that he had. But, you know. Also, it's the 80s. We're not invested in startups like we are in 2022, you know, so that makes sense.
So Phil Knight courted Spencer Haywood, and Spencer was working with Nike and with Phil, and he was testing out the blazer that we got to see. And he signed an equity deal with Nike in 72. And tragically, I'm reading here, tragically, his agent sold his stock behind his back through power of attorney. And he missed out on about $3 billion.
Whew.
Whew.
Pour one out for Mr. Haywood, that is just, that is brutal.
Like, yeah. I read that and started sweating. That was, that's terrible.
Nothing like people fucking up other people's money, man. That's, mm-hmm. That is just the worst shit to hear of all time.
Yeah.
Seriously.
So here's the deal. Usually when I do these ad reads, I've never really tried the product until they became sponsors, and then they give us samples and I try them and then I endorse them. I'm not trying to make it seem like it's fake. It's real. I've tried them and I like them, but it's not like I've ever used these things before they became sponsors. Today's a little different. Credit Karma. I'm telling you right now, I've used Credit Karma to fix my credit, to figure out what the problematic things on my credit report was, to pay those things off, to get a loan in order to pay off some of those things, to apply for credit cards, to get credit cards I'll qualify for, to take care of them the right way, and then to make sure I level up. Credit Karma uses your credit data to find loan offers that are personalized to you so you can have a better idea of what loan amount you can get approved for. Credit Karma will even show your chances of approval so you can choose between loan offers that you're more likely to get approved for and apply with more confidence. I've done this, ladies and gentlemen, and it absolutely works. Comparing loan offers on Credit Karma is 100% free, and best of all, it won't affect your credit scores and can save you money. Credit Karma, apply with more confidence today. I am talking to you as someone who has fixed his credit using Credit Karma before they ever paid me to do this stuff right now. That's right. Ready to apply? Head to creditkarma.com/loan offers to see personalized offers. Go to creditkarma.com/loan offers to find the loan for you. That's creditkarma.com/loan offers.
And he didn't have a great time in this episode either. Basically, you know, when I was reading his Wikipedia last episode and I was talking about
he was
addicted to cocaine. It came right around in the form of Richard Pryor this episode.
And Dr. Mike.
And Dr. Mike. They were there to fulfill all of his needs. He came out the locker room at the wrong time. He should have just been 30 seconds later because, Richard was there with white bitches, 7-Up, and plenty of cocaine for them. So,
what did you think of the Mike Epps as Richard Pryor?
Man, you know what? It grew on me. The second scene was a lot better than the first one, I felt like. And part of that was due to the editing. They were editing him very oddly in the first scene, and it wasn't coming across right. I don't know if they were comfortable with it, with his performance maybe at the beginning, or the lighting, or what it was. But I could feel it as the viewer. And in the second scene, he felt a lot more comfortable in his line delivery and his approach to the character. But I'll say, like, I give him like a 4 out of 5 because I liked his serious take at the end of the first scene when he's kind of schooling Magic on dealing with white men and, you know, getting famous. And when, you know, say goodbye to Irvin, say presto to that nigga.
You know, and I want to know, Jason, who do you consider, like, today, who do you consider to be black famous that maybe white people don't really know about?
Mike Epps?
so he's not on the Kevin Hart level. Yeah, not quite.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, like Lorenz Tate is black famous.
Yeah. Yes, he is.
You know, because white people would not know who he is.
Yeah.
I know who he is. I'm not the target demo to be stumped on this, but yeah. Speaking of celebrity cameos, we got Mike Epps showing up as Richard Pryor, which I did enjoy, especially that line you mentioned, Jason. And then we also get a sneak peek because it's not all going bad for Spencer Haywood. We get to see Amon.
Yeah, and of course,
I didn't know to be married to David Bowie for a very long time, but that was another little stranger than fiction situation where it's like, oh yeah, Spencer Haywood just gets to the Lakers, already got a celebrity girlfriend.
Yeah.
Hot. It seemed like he had everything going for him, and to lose that $3 billion, man, that's tough. Knowing that's his full story. And it's crazy, you know, because also part of the Los Angeles thing to me, like, I've read books about, like, they have all these, like, random weird crime stories, like the Black Dahlia and, like, other, like, there's there's a weird chemistry around tragedy and Hollywood, and
you City have of broken dreams, Jason.
And so that's what makes the Magics and, you know, obviously the Dr. Buses even more impressive, you know, like the people who are able to come here and thrive within this, you know, hellscape. Like, yeah. But it's beautiful. And, you know, we kind of get into all the different like tiers of that. And, you know, obviously Magic gets schooled about his, you know, basically succumbing to women and his vices. And, you know, we got obviously the other more tragic side of like Jack in the hospital and like, you know, like,
yeah,
how that's going to change his life and all of that. And so, yeah, we got a couple of interesting hospital scenes. What'd you guys think about those?
I feel some kind of way because I spent a lot of time in the hospital when my mother, she had a brain aneurysm. And just the whole, like, just the unknown once they go under the knife and, you know, they're just on a ventilator for who knows how long. And with Paul, he is just so stressed out. He's thinking that, you know, oh, it's just he just fell off the bike. He just took a tumble. We need him to coach tomorrow. And it's like, no, it's not going to work like that.
Yeah, he did the classic.
Get another doctor.
I am very important, and this man needs to be alive tomorrow. So fix him. And they're like, well, this is how science works. This is how medicine works. Like, that's not going to happen. And, you know, he eventually has to figure it out. But I don't know. I mean, you know, Tracy Letts still acting his ass off even in the hospital bed, like when he wakes up and go big against Thompson.
So wait, I love that whole arc throughout the episode where it was kind of like, first we get the flash of Jack on some like Fight Club shit where it's just like a flash right there in the scene, and then we keep going to this coma fever dream that he's having, or is Paul having it about him? We don't know, you know, who's the perspective, but Paul is having this Finkel and Einhorn battle of Haywood or Thompson or Haywood or Cooper, or who's gonna guard Thompson throughout the episode. And so then Jack has his fucking Rosebud moment.
He solved it. Yeah, he figured it out.
In the hospital bed. And he's just like, like, what did he tell him? What did he say, Max?
He wanted him to go big and have Haywood boxing out Ellis so that then you could get, you know, then you could double team Thompson. It was, I don't know. I don't know. It's like, okay.
Paul's like, that game was 2 weeks ago.
But he didn't even say if they won, which I thought was a funny
thing.
He didn't say what he did. He didn't say if they won. We don't know. Cliffhanger, right? I guess he'd go check the schedule, but it's like, no, we've moved on to other shit, Jack. But that was definitely a good way to string that along throughout. And then, you know, you get the other side where you get Paul tripping about it the entire time. And just like you said, like, what do I do? And then he kind of pulls it together, though, in the locker room. I got to give it to him. Like, he does drop a quote that absolutely no one understands. And then he
circles was another
back.
Great magic, another great magic moment, because Magic just interprets everything for everybody. So simply, he's like, so Coach dead? And everybody's like, yeah, is he dead? What the fuck did you just say?
That's the only reason people say big words, right?
Get sorrow and grief words. And it's like, but what are you saying? What are you saying? And I'm going to be real. I loved English. I was incredible in, you know, high school, college with it. But when it came time to study in Shakespeare, that shit was tough. All of that went over my head. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I never was much for Shakespeare.
Nah, couldn't be.
Iambic pentameter, Midsummer Night's Dream, all of that. You can miss me, son.
But can we talk about Dr. Buss meeting with the owners of the Great Western Bank
at
the
Beverly we got another Jack
Hills Hotel. Yeah, we got Jack.
Yeah, which was great. He sends over a bottle to the table of Frank Mariani and Jerry Buss and the two bankers, Wes and some other guy. And Dr. Buss is ready to make a deal with the $72 that they have in Frank's pocket.
Yeah, and it should be said that the bottle from Jack, they had to comp his tickets for the year.
Season tickets. That's how
it started there, and I have a feeling that, you know, doesn't seem like Jack's probably paid for too many tickets in his lifetime. That'd just be my guess. But that was right. Well placed, yes. And then, you know, they just continually putting their back against the wall with this, right? Like, we got to manufacture as much drama as we can from this loan situation, even though we know that he's going to figure it out. But
it was fun, though. It was fun to watch them go through it, and also how it connects to the story with the mom, I thought was great.
Right.
And so I like how they give this interplay of family and the drama and, you know, basically them trying to stretch a dollar and figure out their next play. It's a family-owned business. Everybody loves to say that about the Lakers. So I like how they build that up. And then just also whenever you get like this, the surly banker asshole jerk that's kind of like a Shooter McGavin almost type of guy. You just like, you want to punch him in the face. I love when you get those characters. And then John C. Reilly kind of plays with him a little bit, which is fun.
Yeah. Frank, you know, he tells them the payment plan is that we don't plan to pay.
Pay, yeah.
They pretty much just want an extension and a new line of credit and more time to, you know, make some money so that they can
classic, do something. Classic move, you know, just when you get, when you owe somebody money and you flip it on them and make them give you money, that is showtime, baby. That's how it's done.
I like that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It's winning time. That's what I meant.
And I guess in a way that kind of mirrors what Magic is doing, right? Like, they're, Jerry and Magic are both pulling off incredible tricks in this episode. And, you know, Magic's is with the ladies and Jerry's with the dollars. And that's kind of their thing, right? So that was, it's fun to see. Also, I love the scenes with Jerry and Frank. Like, those are becoming like one of my favorites. That little, those riffs that they have back and forth. What did he tell him? He said, he called him Clark Gable, or who did he call
Frank
him?
Astaire or something.
Fred Astaire. I wrote, because he called him, one of them was a female. I don't know if it was like, he said, you're Gene Kelly, you're Ginger Rogers.
Gene Kelly and Ginger Rogers, famous dancers, and the whole thing was everything that Gene Kelly could do, Ginger Rogers could do backwards and in heels.
That's fire.
I like that.
Well, speaking of famous dancers, they also mentioned Michael Jackson, who they're comping some more tickets.
Yeah.
Before we get introduced to the Forum Club, which was fun. That took me back to like Entourage, because that was like the HBO vibe I got from that scene. We got a nice little Coke sniff, see some girls, everybody smiling. You know, it's like you get that little party edit. Man, that's just like a shot of excitement into the show.
But the one thing that they are really battling at this point is that at the meeting, he's like, so what if I say that you guys have to pay this $3 million tomorrow? And he's like, you know, we'll just file for bankruptcy and you take, you know, whatever crumbs that we have. And they're like, oh, the Lakers is worth something. And it's like, well, actually, my wife owns it. So my ex-wife. So it's not even like mine. And he goes to his mom's house and she is just going through it. What a scene. As soon as he walks in, papers are being blown everywhere. She's losing her shit. Jeannie is just confused and just trying to do whatever she can.
What was Jeannie doing?
I don't know. She was just there. I don't know.
It wasn't no smell. Jeannie, you should have closed that window. All them papers flying everywhere. Girl, we need them papers.
And
you
then,
know how that is, though? When your grandma tells you to do stuff, you just feel like you have to do it.
She's
been doing it your whole life.
I was going to say one thing about Sally Field. She going to lay in that bed. She going to die in that bed. I was like, gave you that Forrest Gump vibe. She's sitting in the bed. I was like, wow, I've been watching Sally Field in that bed for 30 years.
Don't nobody lay in a bed like Sally Field, man.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so what we suspected, what they teased us with last week, right? Like, something's up. Something's up with Grandma. Not all the marbles are where they're supposed to be. And we get a very interesting reaction from Jerry, Dr. Buss, which is complete denial.
Yeah.
Let's just pretend like everything's fine. She'll be fine. She'll figure it out. It's going to be fine. Jeannie, you especially, chill out because it'll be fine.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's going to be fine, guys. Hate to break it to you.
No. Nah. And I relate to Jeannie. Like, I had, you know, I dealt with this issue with a great grandmother of mine when she, you know, developed signs of dementia and Alzheimer's, and it was just very tragic. Like, I called her one time and she started asking me like the same questions over and over. And I'm like, and questions that she knew the answer to. So I'm like, okay. I remember she asked me like, how's your mom doing? I'm like telling her, yeah, my mom's good. Well, how's your mom's husband doing? My mom's never been married. So I was like, okay.
Not too good.
Right. And then, you know, I went to see her and she confused me with her daughter that had passed away decades prior. So I was like, okay, something's happening here. And I will say that I think that this was my dad's grandmother, that my dad was in a bit of denial because this is the woman who raised my dad and he's always seen her in her quote unquote, like right mind. And so, yeah, you're going to have a bit of denial, like, no, everything's fine. She's just probably, you know, it's whatever.
Yeah. Right. Plus the stress of, you know, the,
everything
the
$3
million
on.
Loan and like yeah. they have to file the paperwork. Like he really doesn't have time, quote unquote, mm-hmm. to attend to his grandmother or to his mother's declining condition. It's yeah. not on his to-do list right now.
Yeah. No time to sit with that.
Jeannie, just fucking deal with it. It's fine.
Get your shit together.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was on one. It's a lot going on. We still don't know what's going on with Jack. And then Paul has to go to the press conference. Oh, Jerry has some good lines. Jerry West has some good lines in this episode.
I see, this is exactly what I'm thrilled about the way they did it, right? We had a ton of Jerry West, episode 1 and 2. We know who he is. We got a feel for how Jason Clark's going to play the character. And then now he just pops up and he just like drops one-liners and sometimes he's wearing a bucket hat and he's just kind of around. Like, it's fantastic.
Yeah. No, that's great. I loved everything he did in this episode. It was excellent.
He's settling into this, you know, unofficial role of what, president of operations. Like he's the guy to pull everything and everyone together. He's helping everyone with the transitions of from coaches, from not having a coach, one coach quitting and, you know, bringing in another coach. So I like what we're getting with Jerry. Even though, you know, we're not getting as much, we're getting just enough.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. And Paul just lays an egg, takes a shit on the stage at the press conference. He started getting too chummy with the press. He was swimming with the sharks and, you know, stuck his hand out. And they're like, what the fuck?
Yeah,
is he a vegetable? Is Jack a vegetable?
He said the right thing, and then he just started feeling himself, and he kept talking, and then he dug himself a grave. It was pretty well done there, yeah.
So he said, "If it be now, 'tis not to come. If it be not to come, it will be now. If it not be now, yet it will come. The readiness is all." And everyone's like, "The fuck."
That sounds like what Cousin Greg was trying to say when he was deposed in Succession. If it is to be said, so it be, so it is. It's the same level of intellect that we're dealing with and kind of the same gangly body in Jason Segel.
For sure. I love Jerry's like, what the fuck was that?
He was like, my comfort zone.
Yeah. And then, we get Coop and Haywood. They had a little arc in this episode.
Yeah.
Basically, Coop is unsure of himself, and Haywood's trying to give him some confidence, and he ends up on the wrong side of that engagement as well, because he ends up on the bench when Paul benches him in favor of the more defensive-minded, quick Cooper.
And in shape,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Haywood got a little offended and stepped to Paul. And Paul has his first kind of confrontation, interaction with the player because, you know, he was just uncomfortable the whole time. And he reassures Haywood that it was a basketball decision, gives him a polite smile, and goes on about his day.
And then the fellas started to rag on Magic. about his little boo thing that really ain't his boo thing, who wants to be his boo thing. She brought huge flowers to the hospital, for Coach. And, yo, that just really fucked him up. Because I guess at the time where the guys are at the hospital, he's having these meetings with the sneaker companies. And he was like, I didn't even know she showed up on my behalf. Like, what the fuck is that? And so that's when he has to pull her into the hallway like, hey, girl. But what I did like about that scene is that Jeannie read the moment. She read the room, was like, you know what? I'm going to take you to your seats, girl. Because he is not focused. He is mad right now. He doesn't really want to talk to you. So I'm going to just get you on. And Cindy's dad, Dr. Day, came in right on time so they could have their, you know, their talk and their situation.
Yeah, Cindy was doing the most this episode. She was trying to help Magic in every situation.
I think so, too.
Yeah, and that's the fucked up part about it. It's just Magic didn't want help from her. He wants Cookie.
I mostly just feel bad for her, man. That's really the thing. Like, you know, especially to really help Magic out by bringing in her savvy dad and then have her dad fucking burn her, you know, and oh my God, basically to have, imagine if you're dating someone and they're like, you know, you're great. You know who's really dope? Your dad.
I want to fuck with him. I'm going to hang out with him, actually,
and I'll catch you later. Thanks, though. Thanks for the time. Thanks for bringing the flowers and embarrassing me.
That whole scene at the Forum Club was like, that was a lot. When she came in, you know, after, you know, he had his whole talk with Richard Pryor, Dr. Buzz comes over and pulls him over and just showing him off. It's like, look what we got. This is our star and he's ours. He belongs to us. And she comes over and sits on his lap and becomes all of a sudden his publicist. And, you know, oh, we should sign autographs. It's like, girl, what are we doing? Now that was the part that I was like, okay, girl, now you have really overstepped. What do you mean we need to sign autographs and I have a pen and here we go? And, you know, did he tell you that?
She had a pen.
Yeah. And he was like, oh, yeah, she has a pen. He was so disturbed. He takes her into the locker room and is like, look, bitch. No, I am not who you think I am. Why do you love me? Why are you doing all of this? And she's just obsessed with this guy. But I get it. Like, I could see Magic being the most charming guy. And I don't see him really talking shit to her when they're just, like, having their own thing going on. But in that situation, it's like, okay, now you've done too much. And I got to put you in your place. But he's a softie.
They kind of show that with Magic and the next scene where Magic is the guy who will eat you out, but he won't say I love you. That's kind of who he is, right? He's very nice, but he's not going to stay the night. So, you
know.
That's
very
Magic Johnson.
Guy.
Yeah, exactly. So they love him. What's not to love? You know? It's hard for them to let go. With such a, and he's the king of L.A. He's running the Lakers. He's a young man. You know, he's had the world at his feet. And he's, you know, being as kind to everyone as he can. But there are only so many hours in a day. And he wants to accomplish the things he wants to accomplish.
Also, I need to say that it was super fucked up of Magic to not show up for his coach at the hospital. Cap called him out for it. That's unacceptable, bro. Like, I don't even know. Like, you would lose so much credibility if that happened for real. And then, finally, I wanted to acknowledge, because it was a line from the background, but I'm about 99% sure that it was my guy Landsberger, the white man, who said, as they're roasting Magic for his girl, he says, I'd like to be friends with her. Yeah.
I didn't hear it.
Yeah.
I didn't hear that either.
Landsberger.
The line I wanted to shout out was from Jack when he comes back and he says, fuck my dick.
Yeah. That was a line reading. Oh, man. Line reading and a half right there.
Oh,
yeah,
my God.
That was great.
You got anything else? What else happened in this episode? So much.
It was so much. Yeah, that's what I was saying. It was such a fun episode. Paul pulling up in the VW in the front of the Forum to go coach the Laker game. Like, That was great because it's like he doesn't. Yeah, he's not rich yet. He's just this dude pulling up in a VW, not a BMW, to go coach the fucking Lakers. Like, I love that little moment right there.
Well, we did get a deal between Dr. Buss and Great Western Bank where they got the 6-month extension, but at 30%. Interest. That is
the VIG.
OD.
Yeah, 30% on $3 million.
Woo!
That's
crazy.
It's a healthy sum right there. It's another million.
Well, come back in May, and after they win the title in a few weeks of vacation, he's gonna walk in his office in Sacramento, and he's gonna beg to keep his business.
That's right. Mm.
Just like we're gonna beg the show to change its title, but they're not gonna do it because this is Showtime, the podcast based on the show Winning Time, which is based on the book Showtime, which airs every Sunday night on HBO, not Showtime. For Bethany Anderson, Jason Madison, I'm Anthony Mays, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks.